Hey, welcome to this week's edition of Everything Fast Pitch by Fast Pitch Prep. Coach Don and I are back together. Unfortunately, we're not together in the studio. As many of you know, I've been on the recovery train here for a few weeks. Fortunately, had another episode, had to have another major heart surgery. So I appreciate Stan and Don keeping the content flowing, doing the episodes while I was laid up and unable to get going. But we're going to be doing the remote recording here for a little bit while I continue to recover and get back in the swing of things. But we wanted to definitely get going again with episode number 313. So we got a really good show lined up for you here this week. In our warm-up segment, we're going to talk about our Did You Know City of the Week, Player of the Week, Equipment Tip of the Week, have a fun listener question, and of course, Paige's Power Play. In all of our segments today, we're going to answer some questions from listeners. Leadoff segment is going to revolve around some school ball problems and teams that are carrying too many players. In our cleanup topic, we're going to talk about the idea of needing to travel great distances to play on better and better travel teams, even at very young ages. And our action coach coaching tip of the week this week, Coach John's going to talk about communication, why it's so important in the world of business and in the world of softball. Before we get into all that stuff, though, let's talk about our sponsors. First, the Anderson Bat Company.
Everything Fast Pitch is very proud to have Anderson Bat Company as our presenting sponsor. Anderson Bat Company is using the latest and greatest bat technology to corner the market in the fast pitch world. They have the -9 rocket tech, the -10 carbon, and the -11 carbon light. Anderson Bat Company is using this technology to put a high-performing bat in the hands of hitters that really know the difference between a good bat and a great bat. We're also working with Anderson to provide a discount for all of our listeners. Go to the Anderson Bat Company website and order your bats. Use the EFP20 discount, which is for Everything Fast Pitch, and you'll get a 20% discount.
Make sure you take advantage of that EFP20 discount. That's a great way for you to save that additional 20% and also support the podcast at the same time. Also, if you're in a position where you can help us, we would love for you to become a patron. Go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. We want to say thank you very much to Joe Murphy. Joe is our newest patron, and I want to make sure that everybody considers jumping on board with Joe as a supporter of the podcast. You go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch, and everything's going to be explained to you there. So our warm-up segment is sponsored by Bittinger & Stiles DDS. They're located in Webster, Mass. If you're in the Webster area and have any dental needs at all, please reach out to the folks at Bittinger & Stiles. They are longtime supporters of the podcast, and we would love for you to support them. If you do contact the folks there, just make sure you let them know that you heard about their services from the podcast. So did you know, Don, USA Softball announced their national teams. They announced two different groups this past week, and it looks like international softball in the United States is going to be going strong. It looks like we've got a really good summer season on the horizon for the international teams. But there's two different groups. The main nationals team, which is some of the more veteran players, players that we would recognize from having been on Team USA for the last couple of international cycles. The elite team is the top team. And then the second team, which is really a whole bunch of players that are still stars in college softball right now, and a few players that are recently graduated. But looking at the elite team, we've got Ali Carda and a couple other players that have been on the international circuit here for a very long time. Then also some young studs, T.R.A. Jennings and Maya Brady, that are current college stars, and a whole bunch of other players that have just recently finished. So we're looking really forward to Team USA competing in Japan and the All-Star Series, and then also the second squad, which is a bunch of current college All-Stars. People that we're watching on TV right now, Nigeria Kennedy, Valerie Cagle, just a lot of great players. It's just going to be a fun thing to see. So it looks like international softball for the U.S. is roaring along. It's doing great. And it looks like we're going to have another really strong international presence here this summer.
Tori, that's going to get more and more difficult for us to pick a team with all these players that are coming up that are doing so well. It's going to be exciting.
Well, I know it's the thing that's really kind of changing of the guard moment, because we had the Monica Abbotts and players like that that had been the stalwarts of Team USA for many, many years that have retired and moved off of playing on the international side of the game. And so it's really kind of a strange thing to see some of those amazing legends retire. but it shows you how strong softball is in the United States, that you have a player like Monica Abbott retire, but then you've got, you know, Megan Faramo and Rachel Garcia and a whole bunch
right
of amazing
in.
Players yeah. ready to jump in there.
And we've also, too, kind of had a little bit of a lull in the action with the Olympic scene. So that's going to be exciting to get that going again.
Right. No, and it'll be exciting when we get to the Olympics in Los Angeles. Obviously, you know, Team USA is going to be a really big deal then. And hopefully we can, you know, keep building the momentum the way they are right now. So
awesome.
Our city of this week, Don, is Toronto, Canada. So tell us some Canadian stories.
Well, Toronto, Canada, that's fantastic. And, you know, Toronto's, I think, a really big place. And we've actually at Kennesaw State, back in the 90s and early 2000s, had many kids that would come and play from Mississauga and Guelph and Markham. And there's some different areas around the metro Toronto area that are really, really strong softball groups. And so I'm not really surprised that they've caught on and that they're joining us here on the podcast. And hopefully we can keep them on board and they can continue to share and we'll grow our listeners there. That's awesome.
We're always excited to see the numbers grow. And obviously, when a big city like Toronto, Canada, has a big jump in their percentages, that tells us that quite a few more people have jumped on board and are listening in that area. And we always ask our listeners to spread the word. Tell your friends, people you know that are fast pitch fanatics like you are, might not be listening to the podcast yet. Get them hooked up, and we'll take it from there. But we want to say congratulations to Toronto, Canada. You are the Fast Pitch Prep City of the Week. Our player of the week this week, Don, is Ashlyn Blackwood. She's a 10 and under player. She plays in Navarre, Florida. Again, another one of those players that's been working super hard at her game. Started off as a rec player and is now starting to play travel ball too. In her last rec game, she had 9 strikeouts, which was a big confidence booster for her, and then kind of allowed her to gain that momentum and carry some success forward as she gets going to travel career. But Coach Lael wanted to talk about her. She plays for the 10 and under Raiders, and her coach is Coach Smith. But Coach Lael wanted to nominate her, even though he does not coach her directly, because she's made such a strong impression. He's been so impressed watching her work ethic and commitment to the game. And so we always want to ask our listeners to find a player in your life that you want to nominate. Somebody, you know, it's great if they've done something amazing on the field, they've had that breakthrough moment, but it's also for players like Ashlyn that are good kids, hard workers, that are really grinding it out and sticking to the game and working hard to improve themselves. And so if you have a player that you would like to nominate, make sure you reach out to us at everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. Either one of those email addresses will work. And again, we want to make sure that we're recognizing players that are accomplishing things in your world. So make sure you send those nominations to us. I want to just say congratulations to Ashlyn Blackwood. You're the Fast Pitch Prep Player of the Week. So equipment tip of the week, Don, let's talk about Mule Tech.
So Mule Tech, Tori, again, all of their products have been fantastic, and we've started using more of their True Flight balls, a product that is just a little bit lighter than your typical softball or baseball, and they've been extremely durable. So I know I'm going to actually get online and order some extra balls there so that we can get a couple buckets for RBP and things like that. For both the baseball and softball. But with Mule Tech, I've got some young students now that as soon as they turn the corner, they want to be the first one to grab the grips so they can slip it over the handle of their bat and start their training with a little bit thicker grip. And they just seem to really be drawn to that. And they'll do that for maybe 10 or 15 minutes of an hour workout. Then they peel it off and their bat handle seems, you know, very manageable and easy to work with. The concept is over a period of time, if they do that, it's going to create a little bit more hand strength and back control, and which are obviously good things for us with our hitting. But, you know, all the Mule Tech stuff is fantastic. I'm going to also, too, take a really hard look at some of their screens, because they've done a really good job to give us good pricing on that for everybody here on the podcast with that EFP10 discount. You know, it's just really going to be something that over time we're going to collect a lot of their gear. We already use all their tees and hitting mats and things like that. And just very excited that they're a part of the podcast with us, Tori. It's great.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of the grips. The Ace grips really have been popular with my kids in lessons too. in a 30-minute lesson. We're using it probably 10 minutes of each 30-minute lesson, and it's already starting to pay real dividends. And I've always been a big advocate of increasing hand strength and basically kind of tricking the body into going faster than it normally would want to go. And I think that that's a great tool for that. We also want to talk about really quickly our Square Cuts training discs. Make sure you go to the fastpitchprep.com website, order your Square Cuts training discs. That's Don, Coach Don and my invention, something that we created and is also, I think, an important tool for everybody to have. Go to the fastpitchprep.com website. They're $49.95 a dozen. Go ahead and get Square Cuts ordered up, and we'll get them shipped out to you right away. So, Don, our listener question is sponsored by EAS. EAS's contact number is 770-500-4972. You can reach out to Coach Greg Dees with any recruiting questions you have. EAS is a great service and something that we're really excited to, again, be working with on the podcast. If you have any recruiting challenges at all, again, make sure you reach out to the folks at EAS. It's 770-500-4972. So our listener question, Don, comes to us from Steve. And Steve wants to know, why in the world of school ball and travel ball are the batter's boxes and pitcher's mounds so tore up? He's watching a lot of softball on TV, a lot of the college games, and he doesn't see the same wear and tear on the college fields that he's seeing on the same fields that his kids are playing on. And he wants to know kind of what's going on and why some of those fields are in such bad shape.
Boy, Tori, wouldn't it be awesome if all of those fields could be maintained and managed just like our college fields? Because it is a joy when you dig into a batter's box and there's no ruts, and it's, you know, really awesome and special on the pitch and rubber as well when it's not tore up. But the wear and tear that the college fields see is so much less than a regular rec park or even a high school park. Just the ability to manage them and to pack them and tamp them and, you know, put clay blocks in, you know, where they drag and where they dig in to hit from and things like that are things that we, you and I, used to take a lot of time and pride in making very proper and good. But it's not easy. It takes time to do. And if we would have had more games played on our fields and people jumping in there and digging in more often, I think it would have been a lot tougher to manage than, you know, a lot of the rec parks. So kind of a neat thing to work hard to get a chance to go be a part of a college program where, you know, they are able to manage the fields better like that. And, you know, I do get disappointed and I understand the mindset there. You know, maybe one day it will be that we're all on turf and, you know, there won't be a bunch of maintenance and stuff needed, but the give and take on that's going to be, you know, with wear and tear and on the body and stuff like that when the surface doesn't give it all. So that's a good question, right, though. Yeah.
Steve, Don touched on all the key points. The biggest difference that you're seeing when you watch one of these college games on TV, you're basically watching a facility and you look at a college field where one team is practicing on it and they're playing 3-4 games a week, maybe. And in a lot of weeks, a lot less than 3 or 4 games in a week versus the typical rec field or you know, softball complex field where they're playing a big travel ball tournament, which might have 4 teams practicing on it every night. You might have, you know, like, you know, 4-hour-and-a-half blocks, you know, that 4 different teams are practicing. And then every weekend they're playing games from, you know, 8 a.m. until midnight, you know, Saturday and Sunday. And obviously with that much wear and tear, you know, much of a stretch of the resources to try to take care of the field, the amount of damage that's getting done is something that's just really hard to stay on top of. And I can remember, you know, just doing a quick walk down memory lane, you know, that 2 or 3 times a year when I was coaching at Tennessee Tech, I would completely redo the mound and the batter's boxes. And every time I would do that, I would have to buy a pallet worth of clay bricks and then, you know, several bags of mound clay. And, you know, it was a seriously, you know, a couple of days worth of work of digging it out, excavating it perfectly, laying the bricks in completely flat, you know, filling in around the edges with the clay, soaking it down, tamping it down, packing it down, soaking it down, tamping it down over and over and over again to get it perfect. And I would still have to do that 2 or 3 times a year.
It was awesome. Yeah.
On the college field.
Yeah.
Picture if you got a complex with 4 or 5 fields. And, you know, 2 high school age part-time employees that just drag the fields a couple of times each, you know, each weekend, where they're going to have the time, energy, expertise, and ability to do the same level of work. And this all really changed, you know, many years ago when they decided to let younger players wear metal spikes. That's when the field maintenance went completely off the field.
Yeah.
Because the metal spikes are doing so much more digging and so much more tearing up of the dirt. You know, I do find it very, very disappointing. Sometimes I'll go and watch one of the kids I work with, and I'll be sitting in my lawn chair behind home plate, and she steps up to the plate, and I can't see her feet or ankles because she's in such a deep hole at home plate that the bottom of her legs basically disappear. Or I watch a pitcher out there, you know, pitching, and she looks like she's about 6 inches shorter because she's pitching in some big giant rut as she's finishing her pitching motion. So it's unfortunate that it is that way, but the reality is until we play a lot less games, practice a lot less on some of those fields, we're never going to be able to solve that problem.
Well, Tori, too, the home plate ends up sticking up, too, for sliding into home and stuff like that, and the safety aspect of it can be a little bit of a concern, too, but I do think one day we're going to be going to all turf. I don't know when that's going to come along, but the maintenance, the dragging, the chemicals, the watering, the cutting, the edging, the infield, the lining of the foul balls, all that stuff goes away when we go to turf. But, you know, it's going to take a while.
The one cautionary tale I am going to throw out there, though, because I was at a tournament a couple of weeks before I had to go into the hospital at a turf complex up in Dalton, Georgia.
Yeah.
Those fields are starting to show some signs of rut and wear spots in the batter's boxes, the catcher's boxes, and the pitcher's mound, because even the turf, if you're not maintaining it, making sure that you're, you know, pushing it back in and packing it back down, that will still get tore up. And so turf is going to be way better, but if they don't take care of the turf, it's going to still have some problems too.
Yeah, I think they'll end up perfecting it. I'm not saying I'm a big fan either, because I definitely like natural and I enjoyed working on the fields as well, but you know, I just think that that's the way the world's going to be moving, and we'll see when we let another 5 or 10 years go by and they start perfecting things, and the underneath or the underlay of these turf fields is going to, you know, hopefully be improved too. But I know what you're saying, and the wear and tear, they're going to have to replace sections and things like that in the high traffic areas, but we'll see. It's sure nice to play on a good college field though. All these kids should keep working hard,
Steve,
so they get a chance to do it.
If you ever get a chance to do a team camp or something like that at a college field, I think your kids would really enjoy the opportunity. On top of all the other things that they get from it, just getting to play on a field that's got that kind of maintenance going
on.
It's just kind of a shocker for most kids when they get to actually stand at home plate and not have to feel like they're standing in a gully. So, Steve, thank you very much for that question. If you have questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, again, same email address as we talked about for the Player of the Week nomination, everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. Either one will get that information to us. So, Don, that's going to take us to this week's edition of Paige's Power Play.
Hey, it's Paige. I hope you're having an amazing week. I'm super excited to share with you that my newest training is ready for your athlete. It is called the Failure Recovery Training, and it's actually really not new. It's a training and practice that I use with the girls in my programs all of the time, but it's just new to the public, and now I'm offering it for $19. So even better, right? If you are tired of watching your daughter fall apart after making a mistake, if you're over worrying if she'll be able to get out of her own way after struggling, if you're sick of watching her waste her potential because she is so hard on herself after mistakes, then this training that I created is exactly for your daughter. The details here in this training, your daughter, she's going to walk away with a better understanding of what failure means, know how to recover from failure, and then take action so that she can be confident in her next opportunity, even after experiencing failure. So what's in this is there are training videos that cover those things that I just talked about. There's a failure recovery cheat sheet, her new way to prepare for mistakes and move through mistakes and learn from mistakes. That's a PDF that can be like downloaded, printed, used. You can be used as a guide and you can journal through it in her own notebook, that kind of thing. And then there's some next steps. So go ahead, grab that training. It's on my website at paigechans.com. I can't wait for you to have it in your hands and give this to your daughter. And just a heads up, don't wait any longer to see if she will be confident have more assurance that she will be confident in her next opportunity, even after failure, through this training. I'll talk to you guys all soon. I hope you love it.
Folks, I talk about this all the time. Paige is a rock star. Make sure you check out her programs. It's PaigeTonz, TONZ.com. So our leadoff segment, Don, is sponsored by Elite Sporting Goods. Elite's located at 905 Grayson Highway, Lawrenceville, Georgia. Phone number there is 678-377-0270. You can also contact them at EliteSportsOrders@yahoo.com. Anything you need, bats, balls, gloves, uniforms, the whole nine yards, just contact the folks at the Elite and they'll be happy to hook you up. One of our listeners, Don, sent me this question, and it was a fairly lengthy email, but basically the crux of the question was, at least in his part of the country, it seems like the vast majority of the school ball teams, and obviously most of the country right now, this is spring season, is the school ball season, and that they're seeing more and more schools that are carrying every player that comes out for the team. They basically have no cut policies.
Right.
And that he's seeing some problems with that, because now you've got, you know, players that maybe are not very serious or maybe are not very talented taking up roster spots and creating kind of a logjam for positions in certain situations. And so he was just kind of curious about our idea about the strengths and weaknesses of either carrying everybody or cutting players, basically, because, you know, you can project that they're not necessarily going to be a varsity level player.
No, that's kind of tricky, Tori, because I think our society's kind of moving in that direction where, you know, we want everybody to participate and to have a chance to be a part of, you know, all these different things. And it'll be interesting to watch how we move along. I know for all the time that I've ever been involved in it, it's been a work hard and merit-based opportunity. You know, if you are able to contribute and there is a limited roster number, you got to work hard to be a part of that. And again, it's interesting times as we evolve, and I'm going to be the old guy looking back and sharing how it used to be. But yeah, it's interesting to see. I think that there's a lot of neat things for everybody to have a chance to be involved, but maybe it's a second team or a second tier or a gold, silver, bronze type thing if we have a lot of kids that want to be involved. Because I, on the same note, I hate to tell anybody, no, you can't be involved and you're not going to be a part of this roster and be cut. So that kind of breaks my heart too. Again, I think that there needs to be a work hard and reward kind of thing in life for everybody. And if softball is one of those things, I think that's okay. And it's going to be kind of crazy to watch it all evolve, huh?
Yeah, well, the balancing act between carrying the right number of players and all the appropriate players versus carrying a larger roster and trying to quote unquote, you know, keep everybody happy, I think is something, as you mentioned, is going to continue to get more and more challenging. You know, going way back, once upon a time when I was a high school coach, I coached freshman boys basketball when I was also coaching softball, and our school district had a no cut policy even back then. And so that was way before the current trend of, nobody's feelings can be hurt. But it was just the school's policy. We had a really, really good basketball program. And my first day of basketball practice for the freshman boys team, we had 105 kids in the gym.
Wow.
Kind of a daunting thing to look out there with two baskets and maybe eight basketballs and 105 kids. So basically what our no-cut policy led us to doing was running the heck out of those kids and basically trying to make some of them quit to get the numbers down to where we could actually have practices. And I think the reason that's an interesting analogy is in the running kids so much to make some of them quit to get the numbers down, we undoubtedly made some kids quit that were really good basketball players. And so did that end up hurting us in the long run versus if we had been able to just say, okay, you know, I know it's kind of a cutthroat thing, but, you know, this is the 20 best kids and kept them. Now, obviously, it's a daunting task to cut players at a young age because you never know for sure who's going to get better and who's going to improve. I'm not a fan of the keep everybody who wants to be on the team model, just because I think it makes it really hard to have a truly competitive situation. And when we're talking about like a varsity level team in the school ball setting, that should be competitive.
Yeah.
Your team might be great, they might be average, they might be bad, but it's still supposed to be the very best team your school can put on the field. And if we're going to let everybody play, whether they're any good or not, and let everybody have a roster spot, it just makes it pretty challenging to try to make a representative team that's going to say that this is the best team we can possibly put on the field. And so
maybe, you know, could propose an intramural type setting where if there's a whole bunch of kids that want to play, they can play one another in a different setting.
Right. You know, and if you all of a sudden you have, you know, let's say, you know, X number of kids on your varsity team, but then you have five times more kids than you should on your JV team, you know, eventually that log jam is going to still, you know, create the same problems for you. So to me, I'm much more of a fan of making those hard decisions. Every once in a while that you'll screw up and cut a kid that develops and turns into a really good player. But there's stories too of kids who got cut when they were freshmen that came back when they were sophomores, had worked really hard, you know, developed their game, and all of a sudden as sophomores were in a position where they could contribute. Yeah. Or maybe they didn't make the varsity, but they were on the JV as sophomores that they worked really hard. So then when they got to be juniors, they could be stars on the varsity. And so I think there's ways for us to have a manageable roster size and still
have a good competitive product.
Opportunities open for kids as they develop.
Yeah.
I don't think we've solved the problem for the schools that are trying to carry way too many kids, except in that situation, I feel bad for the players that feel like they're being held back because they're stuck in a situation where they're practicing maybe with players that are not close to them in skill level and stuff like that. But I don't know that there's an easy answer to this solution, because I think right now we're in a world where we're so much more worried about hurting anybody's feelings than anything else, that the days of cutting kids that aren't quite up to snuff is probably going to be further and further removed.
Yeah, I was going to say, just keep digging in your heels and do the best we can do and in the environment that we're in, and you know, try and rub off on a positive way on all the kids that the coaches are keeping around. Yeah.
I want to say thanks to John for sending that question in. Our cleanup topic this week is sponsored by Pinnacle Power Butter.
Everything Fast Pitch is very proud to be sponsored by Pinnacle Power Butter. It's a nutritious snack that every athlete should have in their bag of tricks. It will allow you to get a great snack, something that's healthy and nutritious, all natural, and goes a long way towards making a ball player a better one.
And Tori, our listeners can get their Pinnacle Power Butter at pinnaclepowerbutter.com, and they can place their order there. Again, that's pinnaclepowerbutter.com. If they use their promo code of EFP10, they can also get a 10% discount. And we're really excited that they're on board with us. Products are great. We've used them and tried them at home. The whole family loves it.
And again, make sure you take advantage of that EFP10 discount. That's a great way for you to save that additional 10% and also help support the podcast at the same time. So Don, this one comes to us. This is a travel ball question. Jenna's daughter is kind of at a crossroads. She's a very talented young player. And in the community that they live in the area that they live in, the opportunities to play at a really high level are somewhat limited. Now, it's kind of a balancing act situation for them, because the team that she's on, they practice a lot. They work really hard. She feels like it's been really good for her daughter's development, but they're not going to travel much. They're not going to play in some, you know, in a lot of more competitive tournaments, you know, just one of those, you know, more of a regional type things. You know, a lot of the players that she's teammates with now, you know, the families have a lot of other kids and a lot of other things going on that make it very, very difficult and unlikely that that whole group of people is going to be able to commit to playing, you know, on a bigger scale and in bigger tournaments. And because Jenna's daughter is such a strong player, they're considering the idea of traveling to join one of the quote unquote, you know, we always kind of tease about being team parking lot kinds of teams, where they might not practice very much. They might not, you know, have players that, you know, all know each other on a first name basis, but they put together a really good team of kids from, you know, a wide ranging area that show up and play in all the big tournaments. She was kind of curious what we think about the strengths, positives, and negatives of that kind of an opportunity in that kind of a situation.
Tori, I think that's a great question too, because it's exciting to be a part of, you know, a more local group. And I'm a big advocate of that for sure. But if our skill level has kind of exceeded the potential to grow in that environment, maybe it might be fun to at least experiment with picking up with some of those teams that might be further away and logistics might be tougher, but to be in that arena and kind of see how things go and make sure that we mesh and that it is what we expect it to be before we make a full commitment to it. And it sounds like there might be some open weekends and things like that with our current group that would allow us to, you know, venture off and meet some new people and see how that might play out. And then we're not really giving up on the group that we're with currently all together right yet. And maybe this spring and summer we can, you know, start finding out where our perfect spot might be with another group and then completely decide whether that's for us or not. That might be a way to get through it and merge into something new.
The trade-off to me is if she stays with the team she's with now, they're going to continue to practice a lot. They're going to do a lot of those kinds of things that really do help with your development as a player. The positive, if you join one of the traveling roadshow teams, is that you're going to be playing with a whole lot of other like-minded people that are really committed, that are into it for the same reasons. They want to get recruited. They want to play in college. They're willing to do whatever it takes to get to that next level. Once upon a time, if somebody would have told me that we'd have, 12 and under and 10 and under teams that would have players from four or five states and teams that maybe had a couple of practices a year and then just showed up and played in these big events, I would have laughed out loud and thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. But now that I've been around it for a while, I've seen it happening more and more. And for players that really want to play at a high level with really talented teammates, the traveling and the making a commitment to that kind of team is something I can understand. But it's definitely a give and take. And I think your idea of trying to gradually see if it's what you want to do or not, I think makes sense. But the idea of, I've seen some really, really strong teams. When I was helping with John's younger team, played a team that was based out of Illinois that had players from seven different states, and this is 12 and under. And one tournament we were playing great and we beat them. And I think part of the reason we beat them is because we had practiced so much and we're so much more
did the little things right.
In our approach that, we made some plays in the championship game that were just experience-based things, covering bunts and things like that, that helped us win that game. The second time we played them, they beat us. And that was one of those where their talent was just so overwhelming that, that they were able to beat us, even though, we still probably did some things a little bit better than they did. They were just so strong, so skilled that they were able to beat us. And so I've seen both sides of it. I'm always a fan of practicing and working hard and having a chance to be in a team setting. But I'm not going to say that it's a really bad idea either to go the other route, as long as a player is going to work on their own. Maybe she can work it out with her current team to still practice with them and get a chance to get some on-field time and things like that while she's transitioning to playing with this national team. So I think that there's hopefully going to be a balancing act in there that will work. But I get why people do it. I don't love that that's where we're at, but I also can't tell people it's wrong for doing it.
Tori, I think the key is, just like you said, is being able to manage the reps on your own, because you're not going to be with that group that you're competing on the weekends with. So if you're able to do that, just like you said, keeping a good relationship with the group we're with currently and seeing if that's something that's manageable, I think that'd be a lot of fun too.
Yeah. So Jenna, thank you very much for the question. Hopefully this gives you a few more things to think about, but I think, it's definitely a trade-off, something I totally understand. And maybe I don't really totally understand it, but I understand why we're at where we're at. So hopefully this will just give you some better ideas and hopefully give all of our listeners a chance to kind of think about, is this something they want to consider doing as they move forward? So that's going to take us to this week's Action Coach Coaching Tip of the Week. Coach John's going to talk about communication and its value in the world of business and in the world of softball.
Hey, Coach John Davis here with Action Coach. Today I want to talk about giving clear directions at work, softball field, whatever. This was spurred on by a trip last week that had took me through the Atlanta airport. Don't know how many people here fly through Atlanta, particularly coming in and out, but recently parking has been an absolute nightmare. And it was interesting because there's signs everywhere for parking. There's parking lots everywhere. But there's no way to indicate what lot has space, and you don't know the rate. So you're really just doing it by trial and error. You can go on their website, but they say that you have to reserve a spot in advance, but then they tell you there's no spots available. So it's really not helpful. It starts out with the information on the website, Actually, it's can you find the right website because of all the off-site parking. Then you find the right Atlanta airport parking to make sure you got a genuine site, and then they're giving you bad information. So you drive down there hoping for the best. You drive down there, you can't find anything from the signs, but they've got those mobile pop-up signs that we're used to seeing on the side of the road saying road construction. They're orange. They've got wheels running off a generator with about three lines of text. And it talks about, well, if you want to park, you need to go to this lot. And you need to go to this lot. And then it'll list the five lots, and it'll tell you with a red dot or a green dot, are they filled or not? And you'll see these five lots, and four of them are red, and one of them's green. So you start navigating towards that one, and as you get to that one, there's another one of these devices. And now it's telling you that some of the other lots have some green dots, so maybe they have more space. So you start redirecting because that other lot sounds like a good one. And then you go and see another sign, and it confirms that both of those lots have green dots, so you're still good. And you get right up to the gate that you're going to go into that lot, and it's blocked off because there's cones in front because somebody says that it's full. When the employees are working on the information, then it's full. So somewhere in here, we have a breakdown in communication. Either one of those signs isn't being programmed properly in real time with the status, or, well, one of the two, because they're contradicting one another, and or the people that are running the gates don't know what's going on. So as a result, you have people driving all over the place. You've got to loop back around, causing excess traffic, excess waste, confusion, frustration. People wait for the flights, everything that goes with it. You guys can imagine this. Enough of that rant. But think about your business. Think about things that have happened on the softball field when you're coaching, when you can tell that the communication and the directions haven't been clear. Often we miss those signs because we are so frustrated with what we are seeing in our business or on the softball field. We can't fathom that somebody doesn't have the right directions and they don't know what to do. But here's the thing. The communication is the response you get. So if there's something under your control where you're giving direction and you believe you've given clear direction and people understand what needs to be done, but it's still not happening repeatedly, then perhaps you need to go rethink your directions. Rethink what you say. Ask the individual, what do you think this means? What do you think you're supposed to do in this case? Ask, learn by asking, ask the questions to find out, have you really been communicating exactly what you want to have be done? So, Coach John Davis here with Action Coach, also softball coach. If you want to talk about your business, how to get some better direction in your business, just reach out to me, johndavis@actioncoach.com, and we can talk about communication challenges in your business. Have a great day.
All right, so that's going to wrap up number 313. Please make sure you support all our sponsors, the Anderson Bat Company, Bidinger & Stiles, EAS, Elite Sporting Goods, Pinnacle Power Products, and Action Coach. Please become a patron if you can. Go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. Again, thank you very much, Joe Murphy, for coming on board and being our newest patron. Please make sure you reach out to us at everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com with any questions, comments, ideas, or suggestions. And make sure you go to the fastpitchprep.com website, order your Square Cuts training discs there. And also you can have access to the YouTube channel and all the blog posts. For Coach Don McKinley, our producer, Stan Lewis, this is Coach Torrey saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.